It is good to see everyone here, and it's definitely good to be here myself.
I am glad to be here, and I've had a rough couple of weeks, and yet I'm so glad to be here. God has been so merciful to me, and so I'm fortunate. I got a throat lodging in my mouth as I've been sporting a little bit of a cold after this heart issue, and so I hope it doesn't mess up my speech. You know, it reminds me of old, the old Greek Demosthenes who taught people to put marbles in their mouth and practice speaking that way by putting marbles in their mouth. And each week they're supposed to take a marble out. And then the theory is that after you take all the marbles out, you'd be a good speaker. And that pretty well describes me as somebody who's lost all his marbles. And so I hope this doesn't mess me up. Of course, it's the old story, and you all know this story, you know, about the old preacher who used to put a throat lozenge in his mouth every Sunday. And that way, when the throat lozenge was over, he knew it was time to stop. And of course, that one Sunday, he preached for about an hour and a half and realized he'd put a button in his mouth instead of a throat lozenge. And so here I am. I've got this, and I'm so glad to be here. I appreciate so much everybody's prayers and your kind thoughts and kind words and your visits and the flowers and the cards and just all the generous outpouring of love that I felt. And I appreciate it so much. And I'm looking forward to coming back and being back at work and doing everything as much as I can, as well as I can. We're going to be in Luke, the 8th chapter this morning. So if you want to open your Bibles, you can turn there. I'm not going to use a PowerPoint today. So it'll be Luke, the 8th chapter, and we're going to begin in verse 40. I read a story I thought was pretty cute. This young family, the kids wanted a dog. You know how that goes. The kids want a dog. And they said, well, no, you know, you'll get the dog and you won't take care of it. Oh, no, we promise. We'll take care of the dog. We'll feed it. We'll bathe it. We'll do everything. And they said, no, you know, you'll do it for a while. And no, we promise. We'll do it. Well, so they went and got the puppy. And they named the puppy Danny. And the kids were really good at taking care of Danny for the first couple of months. And then, sure enough, you know, as things go, they started sliding a little bit, and pretty soon Mom had the whole responsibility of taking care of this dog. And so she decided that she was going to find a new home for Danny. And so she looked around and found a place that she could take Danny, and she told her kids that she found another home for the dog, and she was really surprised that there was hardly no response from the kids at all. I mean, they hardly responded at all. And they said to, and she said, no, I'm going to get Danny a new home because, you know, it's just too much to feed him and to bathe him, and he's such a mess. And they said, well, you know, if he didn't eat so much, and if he wasn't such a mess, can we keep him? She goes, no, it's time for Danny to go. They said, oh, Danny, we thought you said daddy. I think it's tough to be a father sometimes, tough to be a dad. And we're talking about courageous parenting. And we're going to look at some courageous parents this morning in Luke, the 8th chapter, beginning in verse 40. You know, usually I like to take, I like complex sermons. I like to take complex subjects and have complex sermons and make them simple where you can present them and understand them. But right now I don't have a very complex mind. So I want to try to take a somewhat simple lesson and keep it simple. And hopefully I meet my goal there and that you understand where we're going. Although there are some complex things in this text. But let's begin by reading verses 40 through the end of the chapter. And as Jesus returned, the people welcomed him, for they had been waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus. And he was an official of the synagogue, and he fell at Jesus' feet and began to implore him to come to his house. For he had an only daughter, about 12 years old, and she was dying. But as he went, the crowds were pressing against him, and a woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and could not be healed by anyone came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped. And Jesus said, who's the one who touched me? And while they were all denying it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing in on you. But Jesus said, someone did touch me, for I was aware that power had gone out of me. When the woman saw that she could not escape notice, she came trembling and fell down before him and declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." While he was still speaking, someone came from the house of the synagogue official saying, "Your daughter has died. Do not trouble the teacher anymore." But when Jesus heard this, he answered him, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe, and she will be made well." When he came to the house, he did not allow anyone to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the girl's father and mother. Now they were all weeping and lamenting for her, but he said, "Stop weeping, for she has not died, but is asleep." And they began laughing at him, knowing that she had died. He, however, took her by the hand and called, saying, "Child, arise." And her spirit returned, and she got up immediately, and he gave orders for something to be given to her to eat. Her parents were amazed, but he instructed them not to tell anyone what had happened. He begins the text by saying, "And as Jesus returned." Jesus had gone over to the other side of the lake. He'd headed that way. But in these days, Jesus was attracting huge crowds, and they're pressing in on him everywhere. And he's performing miracles, and he's teaching them. And he needs a break. He's exhausted. And so he decides to go to the other side of the lake. And he is so tired that as they cross the sea, there's a storm. And he is exhausted. He's asleep in the boat. And this is when they try to wake him and say, "Master, don't you care that we're perishing?" And he commands the waves and the wind to calm down. And the creation itself obeys Jesus. And then they get to the other side of the lake. And there he's met by this crazed guy. This guy who is he's demon-possessed. He's naked. He's crazy. He's living in the graveyard. They keep trying to bind him with chains and shackles. And he breaks them off. And he's just out of his mind. And Jesus cast out that demon. And now he's coming back. And here they're waiting for him. I can't imagine how tired he must be after all these events going on. But he's exhausted, he's tired, and they're all waiting for him. And there's one guy who seems to be first in line, apparently, a man named Jairus. And the text says that he's an official of the synagogue. Now, as we just read over that, it doesn't make that big an impression, but there's a lot said in that phrase, the president of the synagogue. It means that he is the president, he's the leader, he's the ruler of the synagogue, he's the head man in the city. He has gotten to the highest post of Judaism, and he has worked hard. And when he walks down the street, people recognize him. He is respected, he's recognized, and he's probably very wealthy, probably has nice clothes on. His life has been truly blessed. He's very religious, he takes the work of God very seriously. And we find out something else about this guy at the beginning of the text, and that is, he's a dad. He's got a little girl, 12-year-old girl, and it's his only daughter. Some say she's the only begotten. She's his only daughter. And I don't know why he hasn't had any more children. It doesn't tell us that. It just tells us that he has one child. It's this little girl. She's 12 years old. You know, I never was blessed with little girls. I always wanted to have a girl, but I never got to have a girl. I got granddaughters. I mean, granddaughters are just so marvelous. You know, I think little girls have got to be marvelous to have. And what an honor, what a responsibility to be the father of girls. And some of you are blessed with little girls and want to place a responsibility. You know, there's that old song that says, you know, the chorus is, "When you're the father of boys, how you worry. But when you're the father of girls, you do more than that, you pray." You know, it's a great responsibility being a father of girls. And you have to love her and to encourage her and to support her and to adore her and to protect her and enjoy her. I think fathers and little girls have such a special relationship. And this little girl was blessed with a good father. I mean, He loved this little girl, and she was going to be blessed by this relationship. You know, little girls, they get their sense of identity from their fathers, I believe. And they get their sense of security and worth. I think that comes from dads. I think you play such a vital role in the lives of your little girls. And here's this man, he's got this little girl, and he's desperate because she is sick to the point of death. And in the East, this little girl, she's coming into womanhood. This is a couple of years, she'll be married. And he's desperate. And this is where I start seeing this man's courage in the text. And that's what we've been looking at, courageous parenting. This man's courageous. I mean, here he comes to Jesus. And that took a lot of courage, I think, for this guy to come to Jesus. It says he comes to Jesus himself. He doesn't send his wife. You know, you take care of the God stuff, I'll take care of everything else. He doesn't send a wife, doesn't send a servant, he goes himself. And can you imagine how embarrassing this might be before his peers to come to Jesus? Because his peers, a lot of them believe that Jesus is a fraud. And, you know, I can see them, isn't that Jairus? What's he doing? I mean, what's going on with, what's he think he's doing here? And, is he serious? So he risked his place of position, his prestige, and in the community. I mean, because he's so desperate, he's going to come to Jesus, and it tells us that he falls at his feet. Now, in the East, for a mature man to humble themselves in that way is just not done. He comes and falls at Jesus' feet and pleads with him to come to his house and tells him his little girl is dying. And you ever been that desperate before? And I can think back of the few times when desperation was just striking my heart, where you had some kind of emergency in your home and you had to get that person to the hospital, and it didn't really matter what the speed limit was. It didn't really matter what color the lights were on your way there. You're going to get there as fast as you can because you're so desperate, and you just have to do everything you can, everything within your power to do that. Maybe you've been there too. You know, I've been there. I had a little baby that had pneumonia, and we were so desperate to get him to a doctor and to get him taken care of. Or maybe your child has been hurt or sick, or maybe they've been mistreated. You know, there's times when there's just nowhere else to go but to your knees. When your child has been mistreated or has been embarrassed, or maybe your child has just failed miserably, and there's nothing that you really can do, and you know everything's out of your power, and you just feel so helpless and hopeless, and there's nowhere you can go except to fall on your knees. I've been there. That's where this man is. He's got this courageous faith. And, I think sometimes dads are expected to have all the answers. You're expected to have all the answers and to be wise. And sometimes you realize, I don't have any of the questions. I don't know what the answers are. I don't know. And sometimes you realize that problems just can't be solved. And situations have no answer. And things are just out of your control. I think that at parenting, sometimes parenting is accepting a series of things and events that are completely and totally out of your control. I think that parenting is that way sometimes. Parenting is just frightening, it's scary. Realize that it's out of my control. He need to be courageous as parents because things are out of control. And so here's the story of this man, and he's desperate. He comes, and then there's another woman that comes into the story. Another woman, another daughter comes into the story. And this little girl, she's 12 years old, but this woman's been sick for 12 years. She's been sick for as long as this little girl's been alive, and she has a hemorrhage. Now, according to Leviticus, the 15th chapter, this would make her unclean. Now, we know about lepers being unclean, but if you had a flow of blood that wouldn't stop, if you had an issue of blood, if you were like this woman, you'd be unclean just as a leper. You couldn't get around anybody. So here's a woman for 12 years who's basically not been hugged. No one's kissed her, no one's touched her, no one's held her, no one's talk to her much. And I mean, you can't get any more opposite than this little girl. This little girl's been hugged and held and kissed and loved. And there's this woman who's just been, well, she's been pushed aside and she's not been listened to. And she's not had any affection. You know, there's one thing worse than suffering, and that's suffering alone. And this woman's suffering alone, and no one is there with this woman, no one to share her suffering, no one to talk with her. And she's scared, but she has faith. And she's thinking, if I can just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be healed. And she does that, and she is healed. And the crowds here are pressing in. And it had to be tough to get in to see Jesus or even touch Jesus. Because it says that crowds are pressing. Mine says crushing. And the texts say different things because it's so emphatic. What they're saying is, there is just no way to get to Jesus. They're just pressing in on him every place. I can picture in my mind, have you ever seen those, like the reporters? And they're all crowding around trying to get their microphone to somebody or to try to ask a question. And there's just so many people, they can't get in to ask their question. There's just so many around. And that's where the situation is. And then out of all this, Jesus, who touched me? And Peter, he faces me, Lord, you see all these people and you want to know who touched me? That's like the celebrity turning around to the paparazzi and said, okay, who took my picture? Man, what are you talking about? There's all these people. No, somebody touched me because I felt power coming out of me. Now, then talk about a complex series of sermons. That one phrase can be a sermon on its own because I don't understand that. The power came out of him. We'll leave that for some other day. But Jesus says something to this lady. He says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. I was reading that this is the only time Jesus ever called any woman daughter. Daughter. I thought, wow, what powerful words to this woman to have Jesus call her daughter. Because the woman doesn't have a Jairus in her life. She doesn't have a dad. She doesn't have someone to go to Jesus for her. You know, some of you have been blessed with wonderful, marvelous dads. And some of you haven't. For some of you ladies, there was not a dad of courage or character in your life. A dad wasn't there loving you and protecting you and encouraging you. Or maybe you're ashamed of your father. Or maybe because of that relationship with your father, you turned to someone who is worse and to fill that void that your father left. And maybe you can relate to this woman, unfortunately. But here, there's some hope here because this lady had such courageous faith and God was able to take that fatherly role in her life. God was able to come and fill that void in her life and become that father that she missed. And it's such a powerful thing. You know, we see courage in the story over and over. Courage is not the lack of fear. We know that. Courage is not that I don't have any fear, that I'm not scared. Courage is the strength of faith, to know I can overcome this fear. I mean, last couple of weeks I went through some scary things. And it kind of bothers you sometimes. Why am I so scared? Well, because this is a scary situation. But your faith overrides it. You say, well, you know, whatever happens, I'll be okay anyway. And that's what happens to these people here. There's this courage that comes through. And then in verse 49... while he's still speaking, someone came from the house of the synagogue official saying, your daughter has died. Do not trouble the teacher anymore. Now, I don't know who this messenger is. This guy's got no tact at all. If you ever have to give a death notice, don't do it like this. Hey, leave this guy alone. Your daughter's dead. It's out of here. This is not very tactful at all. But he gets this message and all his hope is crushed. All his prayers have gone unanswered. I don't like interruptions. I used to just be bothered by interruptions. And now I realize, as I look at the life of Jesus, his life was basically interruptions. I think, that's my job, is interrupted. People come to you and say, are you doing anything? Well, if I didn't have anything to do, I wouldn't do it here. I'm doing something, but I've got time for interruptions. Interruptions is the job. But Jesus is being interrupted. But can you imagine this guy waiting, it's like in a traffic jam. You got to get somebody here and you're late. And I can't imagine this guy just standing there going, come on now, let's go, come on. Who touched you? Who cares who touched you? Let's get to my house, my daughter's. I don't know if this guy did any of that because it doesn't tell us. But I would be just jumping up and down. Come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. And then, don't bother me anymore, your daughter's dead. Can't imagine just how the air is just brought out of this guy. And Jesus' response, though, verse 50, Jesus heard that. He said to the guy, "Do not be afraid any longer." This is fear. Only believe, and she will be made well. Don't be afraid. Believe, she'll be made well. And so, Jesus goes to the house. He pushes everybody out and says, "No, she's not dead. She's asleep." And they all get a big laugh out of this because they know she's dead. And Jesus is, he knows she's dead too, but she's asleep. And same terminology Paul uses in 1 Thessalonians 4, talking about those who have fallen asleep in Jesus, those who have died in Jesus. And we know she's died because later on in the story tells her spirit returns. But to Jesus, to God, sleep was what describes death. I mean, we don't usually think about death as being asleep. You know, I like sleeping. And I like waking up in the morning. And he's saying, this is what death is like. It's like falling asleep. Just a restful thing. And you're going to wake up in the morning. It's going to be good. And he tells this little girl, "Child, arise." And that's what any parent would tell a little child in the morning. "Come on, it's time to get up." And that's what he says. "Child, arise." And what we have here is two very desperate situations met with faith. And what lessons do we as parents, as courageous parents, take away from this? I think the lessons we should take away, first of all, is to trust God. You know, there are, you know, most things in life are just absolutely, totally out of your control. You have to trust God. They are just out of your control. And if you've not ever felt that feeling of things being out of control, you will get there someday, I almost promise you. To trust in God is to realize that these are first His children. I know He's given them to you, but they're His too. And I always think, you know, when my children had to go away to school or go away somewhere where I couldn't be, and I was a little bit apprehensive, a little bit afraid, I just say, "God, these are Your children. I'm putting them now into Your care. You take care of them while they're away." And you just have to trust God that He'll take care of those children while they're gone. And then second, to never lose hope, to never give up. And three, to realize that sometimes things get worse before they get better. Oftentimes, the things are the bleakest right before you get an answer. And then you wonder, why in the world did I worry so much? Why was I so afraid? Well, why, you know, why did I have such little faith? And sometimes things are just so frightening and scary, and then you get the answer. And that's the way life is. And then lastly, I just pray that we all have the faith of Jairus and this woman, and that we can be fathers and parents that are courageous like they are. Well, we're going to extend the invitation, and what a great song, of trust and faith in God, and that we can trust and faith, have faith in God, that He will never leave us, nor fail us, nor desert us, that He'll always be there. So to have courage. Let's stand and sing together.
Standing on the promises of Christ my King.